Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome along to this week's Liverpool.com podcast. I'm your host for this week, Matt Addison. James Martin is away, but don't worry, he isn't injured. And just like at Liverpool's first team level, as soon as someone steps out, somebody else can come in and take their place. I'm delighted to say that Andrew Beasley is with me this week. We're going to have a little bit of a look at Liverpool's attacking options for a couple of different reasons, really. Liverpool have got four players now who've got 10 or more goals this season. Only Luis Diaz of the front five doesn't have that. He's on nine, so he's going to hit that at some point, I'm sure. Hopefully, I haven't jinxed him ahead of a big week for Liverpool, but there's obviously been a couple of injury updates as well, and I think it's just generally interesting to have a think about what the future of the Liverpool forward line looks like. Obviously, a new manager in the summer, potentially some changes in terms of personnel across the rest of the team as well. So I think that's sort of broadly where we're going to sort of set the rest of this podcast out for the next few minutes. But Andrew, let's start with Mohamed Salah. Obviously, he's back injury. Some suggestions from Egypt that he might have a little bit of a knock, but that's obviously unconfirmed. We'll hear a little bit more from Jurgen Klopp on that, I'm sure, this afternoon. But it looked to me like he'd never been away at the weekend, and that has to be a good thing for Liverpool.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he was fantastic, wasn't he, on Saturday? I mean, he should have scored before he did, sort of scuffed that shot wide and still had time to score and pick up an assist. I'm sure people have seen, but, you know, he's only the fourth player to score an assist in 30 Premier League games. And he's actually done it three times in the last six, his last six, I should say, because obviously he missed some while he was away and injured and stuff like that. But as you say, it looks like he's never been away. And I mean, if anything, you know, he's now had a bit of a break as the season heads into its sort of final stages. So that's probably a good thing for Liverpool as well, that, you know, hopefully he's a little bit refreshed. He certainly looked it. Certainly looked in good form on Saturday. And, you know, with games potentially every 3 days for pretty much the rest of the season, if Liverpool go all the way in the various cup competitions, things like that, you know, they're going to need him to be at his best. So it was great to see that he looks like he's in form as we enter the sort of most exciting part of the season.
Yeah, I mentioned the sort of refreshment of him in a piece over the weekend, because it's almost, obviously he's not been out for anywhere near the length of time that Kevin De Bruyne has been out, but it almost feels like there was a big conversation about how City will be completely different when Kevin De Bruyne comes back. It almost feels like it could be potentially similar for Liverpool in terms of Salah if he is refreshed. But I suppose, sort of drawing on what we're going to talk about for the rest of the podcast, I would suggest that maybe whilst it will be a big boost for Liverpool to have him back, he maybe wasn't missed as much as might have been feared when he was obviously going off to AFCON, then had the injury. Liverpool did manage to cope without him, even though they will now be better with him. It's kind of a decent situation for Liverpool, really. Of course, even with Salah, there are going to be moments where he doesn't play, but Liverpool do have the options to cope when that is the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you look at somebody like Thiago Jota, and I'm not 100% sure of the up-to-date figures, but basically he scores non-penalty goals about as often as Salah does, and people wouldn't assume that, but he does. I mean, again, another player who's been in, who was in fantastic form after returning from his last injury. As you've alluded to, we don't quite know what the current status is with him, but obviously it didn't look good on Saturday. It's reasonable to assume he'll be out for a while, but I mean, he was like pretty much scoring or assisting every game since he came back from injury. And it just bodes well for the future, obviously. I mean, I think most people would expect Salah to be here next season, but obviously he probably doesn't have that many years left. So having other guys who can contribute regularly is going to be so important. And Jota has shown that he can be that guy, probably more so than the other three of Nunes, Gakpo, and Diaz. He's the sort of next most reliable guy, or certainly has been in recent times. So yeah, they coped remarkably well without Salah. So you know, then adding him into the mix can only be a good thing.
In terms of Diogo Jota, then we might as well come to him next. As you mentioned him, he's potentially, according to those reports in Portugal, going to be out for a couple of months. I think that would bring him back in time for a potential Europa League semi-final, maybe an FA Cup semi-final if Liverpool are still in there. But there's a lot of football to be played before then. It does sort of feel with Diogo Jota, I don't know, to be honest, without having checked this. I probably should have looked this up before we went live, but it does feel like he does have a bit of a tendency to get these injuries. Not necessarily always the same part of the body, but there's been at least two seasons, hasn't there, during his Liverpool career where he's missed 3 or 4 months. That might not be the case this time around. Fingers crossed it isn't. But as good as he is, it does seem to hit him every so often that he does seem to miss quite significant chunks of each season, which I suppose is why Liverpool have so many other options. But equally, it's not great in terms of, he was probably, I would say, in his best form of his Liverpool career in terms of goal scoring. And I don't know whether the numbers would back that up, but certainly it felt like he was in a bit of a run just at that perfect time for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, in some ways he's been unlucky. Well, obviously all players are unlucky when they get injured. It's a silly thing to say. But I mean, obviously the thing on Saturday was just a slightly strange thing that has possibly put him out for a couple of months. I think people will remember he played in a Champions League dead rubber against Midtjylland, I think it was, and he got injured in that. I mean, obviously these things can happen, but probably didn't need to play in that game and, you know, ended up suffering an injury in it. I mean, again, I've just sort of pulled up some figures. I mean, these aren't 100% up to date, but they won't be too far wrong. I mean, he's made 2.6 appearances for every game that he's missed. So that's what you sort of get out of him on average. It's actually basically the same rate as Luis Diaz, but obviously Diaz had one long injury last season and I think has otherwise generally been okay. Now, obviously, not everybody's going to match up to Mohamed Salah's sort of ridiculous record of rarely ever being injured. But clearly, if you're only making sort of 3 appearances for each game you miss, that's not ideal. I mean, there's plenty of midfielders at Liverpool with worse records. But I mean, if we're calling him probably the second best forward, or at least the second most reliable forward when he plays, you want him to play more often than he has been doing. So whilst he's been unlucky, it seems like he can't get through a season without suffering, you know, at least one injury or other that keeps him out for a month or two.
It's one of those as well where you think of his injury record is obviously a bit of an issue in terms of the consistency, but the consistency when he does play, the numbers, as you've mentioned there, are very good in terms of his goal scoring, the assists as well. I mean, the assist at the weekend, for example, before he got injured was just a moment of brilliance from him. But it's also not that long ago that he went over a year, and again, he was injured for a period in that year, but he went over a year without scoring for Liverpool. So it's sort of baffling to me that his numbers are that good, and yet he still went all that time without scoring. I mean, imagine if he'd just scored 5 or 6 goals in that period. The averages and the numbers in terms of when he is fit, it would have been even more skewed towards what he can do. When he's at his best, he is right up there among the very best attackers in the Premier League, or you know, the Champions League when Liverpool are in that. He is really elite when he is fit. It almost makes it even more frustrating that he's now going to miss a period for Liverpool because he's not been able to put a full season together.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the figures here now. I mean, for Liverpool, Jota's got a non-penalty goal every 151 minutes. Salah is at 156. Now, obviously, Salah's sample is much bigger than Jota's, partly for the reasons that we've just said, and he's been at the club longer. But basically, Jota is top of all the players at Liverpool. So he's 151, Salah 156, Nunes 167, Mane was 180, Firmino 229 and stuff like that. So Jota's top of that, of all the sort of Klopp-era forwards. And he didn't score for a year, as you say. I mean, I don't know exactly how many minutes he played in that year. He did have an injury, as you say. But, you know, he's basically worth a goal every sort of game and a half when he can be on the pitch. But obviously that isn't often enough. I mean, he's done 92.3 90s for Liverpool. I think this is his fourth season. Is that right? 2021 he joined, didn't he? So obviously there's still some time to come this season, but if the 2 month injury is correct, he probably only gets, you know, 5 or 10 more games, depending on exactly when he comes back. So let's say he gets to 100 per 90s. I mean, that's 25 a season for a team that are probably playing 50 to 60 games sort of most seasons, depending on quite how successful they are in the cups and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know exactly where he fits, but I mean, that's roughly 50% of the possible minutes. I mean, it's not great, is it?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the frustration with him. But when he is back and when he is fit, hopefully he can get back into a bit of a run. I know when he first signed for Liverpool, I think it was in 2020 rather than 2021. But I think he came in and Liverpool kind of had this player that had been a little bit streaky for Wolves. That was certainly the message that we were getting, that he would go on these runs. And maybe that is the case really with him. Maybe the runs, the good bits have been longer. Obviously the year without a goal was probably a lot longer than what he would have been expecting as well. So maybe it is a similar thing, but just maybe slightly elongated across a longer period of time. But let's move on to the next player we're going to discuss, Darwin Núñez, who is an interesting case in terms of trying to analyse him. I actually thought what Michael Owen tweeted, I think you saw that the other day. Mm-hmm. I think you wrote a piece around that for us, didn't you, the other day as well. I thought that was really interesting in terms of the finishing. Daniel Sturridge as well was interesting. I can't quite remember when that was, but that was at some point this season where he kind of made the point that he maybe needs to develop a certain finish for a certain type of situation that he's in. I don't necessarily think that chipping the goalkeeper as he did at the weekend will work every single time, which was kind of what Michael Owen was getting at, really. But how do you sort of sum him up at the moment? Because I obviously write quite a lot about him because he is a player that does score a lot of goals for Liverpool and is very heavily involved. But every single time I write about him, I'm not quite sure quite how to sum him up.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that probably the best way to sum him up is obviously he's sort of frustrating and inconsistent in front of goal. But ultimately, Liverpool are a better attacking team when he plays. And that has to be the main thing. They get more expected goals, more clear-cut chances, things like that. I mean, most people would say, certainly non-Liverpool fans would say, he hasn't been particularly successful for the club. But he's still averaged like 0.86 goals or assists per 90. I mean, he's nearly delivering a goal contribution every match. And I mean, you can't really ask for much more than that. And that's with him missing all manner of chances that, you know, you would probably expect him to score. I've obviously written various bits over his time with Liverpool, and it doesn't seem to matter how you break it down. He's always underperforming expected goals in pretty much every, you know, with his feet or with his head or at home or away or first half, second half or anything, you know, you can look at. He hasn't performed, and you know, he overperformed by about 10 goals, I think it was, for Benfica the season before he joined. And so he's in this weird position where across his career, he's sort of virtually at sort of level, but it's a massive upsurge the season before he joined, and sort of everything else has been below par, which suggests that sort of below par is realistically his level. But as I say, he just makes Liverpool, he's a magnet for good chances, good opportunities and stuff like that. Like the amount Liverpool have when he's on the pitch is better than pretty much any other team, certainly in the sort of stats era, has delivered in the Premier League, you know, over 3 big chances every 90 minutes when he plays. It just so happens that unfortunately he misses quite a few of them himself. But if you're weighing it up, as I say, if Liverpool are a better team when he plays, then he should be in the team. And that's, I think, Jurgen Klopp, I mean, certainly publicly when he sort of talks about him, if he gets asked about Núñez's finishing, that's the basic line that he's pushing as well. It's like, well, you know, look at all this other stuff he does. We're a better team, and the numbers sort of back that up, really.
Yeah, he's such an interesting case, I think, in terms of the age that he is, the experience that he's got. You kind of think that he could at any moment explode and suddenly it just clicks into place. But then I kind of flip between thinking, well, the numbers maybe don't say that that's the case up to this point. But then again, he's only 24. He's still got the best years ahead of him. He's in a team where he's getting so many chances that you think that at some point he will just have a season where he just puts in an extra, you know, even an extra 10% of them. It would be a substantial amount that would sort of accumulate across the course of a season. He almost feels to me like one where he'll either just be this player forever or at some point, hopefully soon, he can sort of kick on and take that next step and start to do something completely different to what he's doing now in terms of the finishing rather than everything else. Where do you sort of sit on the scale of, is he going to explode? Is he going to stay the same? It sort of feels like it's one end of the spectrum or the other to me, but where do you kind of sit on that sliding scale?
I mean, I'm an optimist, so I'd like to think, you know, at the explode end of the scale is right. I mean, you see how many times he's hit the woodwork this season. I mean, the parallels with Luis Suarez are kind of obvious because of obviously the Uruguayan connection and things like that. But obviously Luis Suarez had the same sort of thing when he first came to Liverpool, you know, very sort of wasteful in front of goal and then exploded and scored 30 goals and sort of never really looked back from there. It's possible Nunes does the same thing, of course. I mean, I'm obviously we'd all like that. He has hit the woodwork. I mean, he's not just hitting the woodwork with, like, you know, half chances. I think it's 8 times he's done it with an opt-to-define big chance this season. You know, chances where you would expect most players to score, and he's hitting the woodwork. I mean, the Toulouse one is probably the most sort of notable, going around the goalkeeper and still hitting the post and stuff like that. But it does. I don't think it would take much for him to be scoring even more goals. I think, you know, an interesting point I heard Neil Atkinson make on the Anfield Wrap was sort of comparing him to Didier Drogba as someone who will cause defences a lot of problems. And some years he'll score 14 goals and the next year he'll score 30 and then he'll go back to scoring 12 or whatever and stuff like that. And I think that's a possibility for Nunes, because he could have done that this season with only fractionally different sort of finishing. He'd have scored so many more goals. So it could be he becomes a sort of player like that who is constantly a menace to opposition teams, but the goal tally from season to season could fluctuate quite a bit. But obviously, you know, we'll hope for more of a Suarez level of upswing than perhaps Drogba, a bit more of a consistent one. But, you know, even if he was doing sort of Drogba numbers for the rest of his career, I mean, I think we'd be happy with that if it was for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's important to say as well, I mean, even if we're saying the worst case scenario is that he does what he did last season and maybe this season in terms of missing chances, he scored 15 goals for Liverpool in his debut season, in a season where Liverpool were basically terrible for all but the last third of the season, where they started to get a little bit better. Obviously, there was then a lot of pressure to get points to try and squeeze into the Champions League. So if the low point is that he scores 15 goals in a season, that's not a bad place to kick on and go forward with. But let's move on to a couple of other players then. We're going to talk Cody Gakpo in just a second, but we'll come to Luis Diaz next. It sort of feels like there's another level to him as well, to me, similar to Nunez in some ways. He's obviously at a decent level. I think 9 goals and 3 assists, I think it is, off the top of my head this season for him. It's not outstanding numbers. He's clearly a very talented player. He's got a lot of potential. There's obviously been off-the-field stuff that he's had to contend with this season. He's come off the back of a big injury as well. So there's lots of reasons, really, to think that there's another level to come from him. You wrote something interesting as well about his dribbling and that kind of thing. I think that's probably what people will think of when they think Luis Diaz, is that ability to go past someone, which maybe hasn't quite been there in the same way that it was pre-injury. But again, what's your sort of assessment of Luis Diaz this season? Because he's another one that you think it wouldn't take that much for him to go up a significant amount, I think, at Liverpool.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a strange career in a way for him at Liverpool, hasn't it? Because obviously he had that first half season, and then, you know, his first full season, he was injured for a huge portion of it. There's then been the off-field stuff, you know, this season, which was terribly unfortunate. And obviously you can't sort of prepare or allow for that sort of thing. But I mean, you look at his numbers, you know, last 11 games, it's 4 goals and 3 assists. I mean, that's a pretty decent, you know, return. If he could sort of be delivering that sort of thing now on a consistent basis, you know, then that would be fantastic. A goal or assist sort of roughly every other game, you know, it would be a good return from him. I mean, yeah, you're right to say about the dribbling. It is quite strange that he's one of the top players in the league for dribbling and then having a shot at the end of it, but he just hasn't scored from it. And then, of course, you think back, well, there's actually the infamous Tottenham goal would have counted for that, but was incorrectly ruled out. But yeah, he's sort of he's been erratic, but I think he's starting to show signs of a little bit more consistency. I think what, you know, we as Liverpool supporters and writers and analysts have got to get used to is, you know, we had that sort of 5 years where it was Salah, Firmino, Mane, pretty much every game, certainly every big game. And now I mean, I think Salah will start pretty much every game when fit still. No sign of that changing. But beyond that, it could be any of the four in the sort of six possible combinations that they go together. So, you know, we might have started the season. I think a lot of people might have thought maybe Jota was fifth out of five. I think most people now might think maybe Gakpo's fifth out of five. But obviously, if one of them goes on a bit of a dry spell, they then become the sort of fifth choice. And while none of these combinations might ever be, none of the three, you might not find a three as good as Salah, Firmino and Mane. The depth now is better than it's ever been. You know, the options to come off the bench, you know, Origi and Minamino both had their moments, but with the players they've got now, the combinations are incredible. So, yes, we'd like to see perhaps a little more consistency from Diaz, but I think he's getting there. And I think it's also going to be very difficult to get consistency from five sort of elite level forwards, which they've now got, just because there's going to be rotation and different combinations, and it may be hard for them all to contribute continually. But yeah, I think what we've seen from Diaz the last couple of months is very encouraging, certainly.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you mentioned there about the rotation, because I think that's probably, it's helpful in terms of keeping these players fit and available and as refreshed as they can possibly be. But probably to some extent for Diaz, certainly for Cody Gakpo, as we'll come on to, it's not been easy to have a run in the side, even when Cody Gakpo's been dropped in. It's maybe more been in a mixed change team, or it's been that he's been dropped in and then taken back out again. Obviously, we don't know at this moment. We'll probably find out in about an hour or so from Jurgen Klopp where Darwin Nunez is up to, because of him dropping out of the team at half-time with a precaution over the weekend. But it sort of feels like any of these players probably just want to have five games where they know they want to start, and then we can kind of assess them a little bit. That's probably not going to happen because of the number of matches, the intensity, the changes that Liverpool need to make. But I think with Cody Gakpo as well, the other thing, as well as the consistency of minutes, is also the consistency of his position. He's played, you know, through the middle, he's played on the left, he's played a little bit on the right, he's played in midfield, which I don't think is something we've seen for a while now, which is maybe a sign of good things in the midfield are starting to happen. Having said that, there's been more injuries in that department as well lately. So I think for Cody Gakpo, I'd agree he's fifth out of five for Liverpool at the moment, but you need to see him three games in a row before we can kind of judge him. And of course, he's already got 10 goals this season, which we shouldn't forget either.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, another player who's sort of delivered when he's played, as you say. I mean, he first two games of the season, he's playing left midfield. You know, very, very few stretches of sort of consistent appearances in the starting 11. I mean, just looking at this season, he had a three-game run where he played as the central of the three forwards, which I think most people would say is probably his best position. But I mean, other than that, he's been in and out of the side and occasionally in different positions and stuff like that. So I think it probably has been hard for him to show his best form. But again, I wouldn't say he's particularly let the side down, even if he is probably fifth choice out of five at present. I don't think he's let the side down, and he's delivering goals and assists as well, just like the others are. So, he will likely feature more, assuming that Jota probably is out now for an extended spell. You can imagine him starting more often. I think perhaps an interesting thing actually is we haven't seen him much on the left, which is where he was really strong for PSV. Klopp just doesn't seem to give him a go there. I mean, obviously, it's probably the position where Liverpool have the most options is the left. You could argue all the four apart from Salah could play there and probably play well and have done. But it seems to be either through the middle or weirdly in midfield. But he should get some more opportunities over the next couple of months, you would think.
Yeah, and again, he might be fifth out of five at the moment. But if Diogo Jota is out, again, if Darwin Nunez is out for midweek, if Cody Gakpo had to play against Luton and then started the cup final next weekend, I don't think anybody would be particularly worried or concerned about that. It's just the level of depth and quality that Liverpool have got in that position at the moment. But just a couple more things then before we come to the end of the show. I mentioned at the start, we talk a little bit about the future, possibly a bit about the summer as well, mainly because I think there's an argument to add another one. I know we've talked through five really, really good players there, but there's always going to be one injured. That's one thing. The Champions League next season, I think we can pretty much guarantee that Liverpool are going to be in that from this point onwards. Obviously, two more matches within that. It's not going to be quite as easy without being disrespectful to the teams that Liverpool played in the Europa League. I think you can pretty much guarantee that whoever Liverpool get next season drawn against is going to be a lot harder than what it was this time around. So they've obviously reaped the benefits of having these five players. I still think there's an argument to go and get one more in the summer. What do you think about that? Would that be a priority for you? I suppose it depends to some extent as well on who the manager is and how they want to set up.
Yeah, I think your last point there is probably the key one, isn't it? Because we don't know as yet who the manager is going to be and what system they're going to deploy. I think you could also, I was going to say you could make a case for maybe Ben Doak getting more minutes, assuming he stays fit. But of course, that's easier in a Europa League campaign than it is in a Champions League campaign. But he'll be an option for, you know, minutes off the bench and cup games and stuff like that. But really, yeah, we're going to have to wait and see who the manager is and what their tactics are going to be. And even then, let's assume it's Alonso for argument's sake. That's, I think, who obviously most people would like. There's no guarantee he's going to make Liverpool play like his Leverkusen team play, even though that would be the logical thing to do. He may not do that with the players available. So I think it's quite hard. I think, again, depending on who the manager is, I think that there's probably more urgent transfer needs for me than getting another forward with, possibly extra bodies for the defence and maybe a holding midfielder, although obviously Endo has done really well this season and stuff like that. But at a time when there's going to be a lot of questions and uncertainty, it wouldn't be a priority for me. But again, it depends which manager gets the job. But I suppose what we can say is they're unlikely to be starting more than three forwards at any time, whatever system they use. So you would think five to cover three with guys like Doak filling in cup games and stuff should be enough. Kate Gordon as well. But a lot can change. If it's going to be two up front, then we've certainly got enough already, you would think.
Yeah, it partly depends, of course, on all of those factors. Kate Gordon as well. I think there's probably an argument for Gordon, Doak, maybe both to be on loan next season. The other thing I was going to mention as well, which sort of plays into it as well as what we mentioned before, is the Mohamed Salah question. Again, I don't think anybody would like to see him moved on this summer. I don't think anybody thinks that will happen. I personally think it just has to be ruled out. You can't lose Klopp and Salah in the same summer. That would be far too much change in one go. But I think it would probably help to get a succession plan in for Salah while Salah is still there as well. Now, maybe there's an argument that Darwin Nunez is that, and maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years of Nunez and then he takes the next step when Salah moves on. Maybe that's the case, but I think that partly plays into it as well. I mean, what would you do in terms of Mohamed Salah for the next couple of years? Because I don't think anybody wants to lose him. There's a bit of a contract question though.
There is. I mean, I would certainly keep him. If it turns out that he's decided, let's say for argument's sake, to run down his contract and next season is his last season, I would still keep him rather than sell unless a ridiculous offer came in from somewhere. Because as you say, there's a lot of changes. So you don't want to be losing what most people would say is your best player. As we said earlier in the show, I think Liverpool have shown that they can sort of cope without him these last few weeks. I don't think it would be the absolute end of the world if he were to leave. But personally, I would be doing everything to keep him and beyond next season as well. But obviously that sort of conversation for another day and another manager ultimately now, unfortunately. But I thought it was interesting that the recent Burnley game, you know, they started with Jota, Nunes and Diaz and all three scored. So, you know, getting all the front three all scoring with one of them not being Salah had sort of never happened before. So that sort of thing shows that there's, you know, hope for the future. And again, the Brentford game, all five forwards either scored or assisted, or scored and or assisted. That only bodes well as well. So, you know, I don't think we're at the point where it's the end of the world if Liverpool are without Salah. But you'd want to be keeping him next season, because I think it's going to be hard enough as it is for a new manager to take over from Klopp. So the idea of then having to be without Salah doesn't really bear thinking about. But if it were me, I think I would at least let him run down his contract, but ideally keep him for beyond next season, for a year or two more as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're both in agreement with that. Give him a new contract, keep him for as long as you can. And I think that the left-footed thing is important as well in terms of the sort of balance of the Liverpool attack. obviously Liverpool have coped without him. But again, it would be a lot easier to keep him for as long as whoever the new manager is can do. That would certainly be something that I think everybody would be on board with. But I think that'll just about do us. I think we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks a lot to everyone who's left comments in the live chat. We have been taking a look at those. I've tried to answer a couple of those questions as we've gone along. Thank you to those who are listening back later on as well. We'll be back next week with the next Liverpool.com podcast. James Martin will be back as well. For now, though, thank you for listening and goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.